Dover's Violin Concerto No. 1 by Paganini, which played by Himari Yoshimura. So now, let me tell you about her background. Himari was born in Japan in 2011 and started playing the violin when she was 3 years old. Her talent was evident from a very young age, and at the age of 4, she participated in her first music competition, and since then, she has won first prizes in all 42 local and international competitions she has entered. That's quite an impressive record. She made her professional orchestra solo debut at the age of 6 and has been performing in various countries, including Austria, Switzerland, and Ukraine. In 2022, she was accepted into the Curtis Institute of Music in the US, where she and all the other students receive full scholarship. It's a prestigious music school, and recently she even had her debut concert in the US alongside her teacher from the institute. Her teacher praised her talent and saying, "When you listen to Himari and close your eyes, you forget her age. Inside her, there is an older person and a wise musician. She is immensely talented." I couldn't agree more with that. I came across one of her videos on YouTube 2 months ago, and I was immediately hooked by her music from the very beginning. It's hard for me to believe she's only 12 years old. Even though I don't play the violin and don't know much about it, when I heard her play for the first time, I could tell that she's extremely talented and has a unique style compared to other violinists I've listened to before. What impresses me the most about her is how she infuses her emotions into her music. She doesn't just play the notes on the sheet, but she truly understands each piece and adds her own colors to it. Each piece has different elements like brightness, sadness, and passion, and she expresses them so well. Listening to her, it feels like she's singing through her violin, and it's almost like different personalities are playing each part. In her videos, you can also see how she pours her emotions into the music through her facial expressions, which I very appreciate. It's incredible how she seems to have so much life experience in her music, even though she's actually so young. I'm always amazed by her talent. So now let's listen to another of Himari's performances. In this performance, she played with orchestra. The last one we listened to is when she was 7 years old, and this one is The Four Seasons by Antonio Vivaldi, which she played during a concert in Montreal in 2023, so last year's performance. This is the fourth season by Antonio Vivaldi, played by Himari Yoshimura. I'm very happy to share my favorite violinist, Himari Yoshimura, with you today. I hope you're not interested in her, and I highly recommend you to watch her performance on YouTube. In fact, I've been spending so much time watching her lately, and I never get bored. There is a Japanese TV documentary about her that you can watch with English subtitles. She also has an Instagram account, so check it out. For those who are not sure about her name, let me spell her name again. Her first name is Himari, H-I-M-A-R-I. And her last name is Yoshimura, Y-O-S-H-I-M-U-R-A. But you can search something like Himari, Japanese violinist, and you can reach her. So that's all from me. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ayu. That was great. It was quite something to the first track we played, the first song we played from listening to her at the competition.
Yeah, competition.
And to see her standing on stage there, just 7 years old, this tiny little girl, and she sets the bow to the strings, and it's like, wow.
Yeah, I didn't expect it. Yeah, how beautiful the violin, the sound of violin is. Mm. I'm not sure about the violin, but yeah, it's so beautiful.
And then that last bit the second one, the Vivaldi that we heard, where she's just 12 years old playing with a full orchestra on stage. Again, quite amazing and a beautiful performance.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for bringing that to us. Mm-hmm. Peter's up next, and you're going to talk about...
Common Core.
Common Core.
And also Bill Gates' funding of it. And it's in 40 states. Yeah. It was originally 45, and now it's
so
in 40.
So Common Core is a program to influence curriculum
in
schools?
Well, one of it was to have standardization. Mm-hmm. And it was an attempt to sort of improve education, supposedly, you know.
Yeah.
And one is to have standardized tests, which is multiple choice. What the concerns have been is that one person, Bill Gates, who has not been trained in education, got such an influence in actual education. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that though he donated through the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation quite a bit, that's not equal to the amount that the government. So funds go into it.
Right.
So the controversy is, should we allow someone with his money to not only have an actual influence in education, but also how a lot of taxpayers' money is being spent.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I think was the COVID in education. It's... Mm. How that is has disrupted it hasn't been brought up, but it's still around.
Yeah.
And the really bad one, I think, is how basic arithmetic is being taught. It's taught in a very convoluted way. Magnus, have you ever seen through the years on this? How it's taught by the Common Core method?
No, not specifically through the Common Core. I mean, I've followed sort of. You know, I mean, there seems to be such a lot of controversy and fighting around education and education curriculum, particularly in the U.S. But I haven't been following specifically the Common Core program.
What I kind of immediately saw was that was to have a convoluted way to learn arithmetic seems kind of wrong, because I think, you know, just teach it the basic way.
Mm-hmm.
For example, there was one thing that was brought up was that they had like 3 times 5, and a student was told it was wrong to present it as 5 + 5 + 5 = 15. It was supposed to be 3 + 3 + 3. You know, that was the right way. And And it's also there was one thing I think they stopped doing. They only did it once as a student. They would have in a group, and you the right answer was what the was what the consensus of the group was, like the 2 + 8 or something.
Yeah.
And if it was the wrong answer, but you didn't go with the consensus, you got. You were marked wrong, but it only happened once. It wasn't like they did it all the time, but it was, I think they kind of disrupted that one. The other thing, okay, here was some of the points that people didn't like about it, was you were getting information on the student, 400 data points on the students, because with Common Core, that's what you're getting, and supposedly... advertiser, whatever, we're getting...
So this was through the standardized testing program, or...?
Just the entire thing in general, because the computers were more part of education. Now, the other thing is that in 2014, a woman from the Washington Post newspaper interviewed. It's on... I saw the whole thing again. And... she interviewed Bill Gates for half an hour on the Common Core, and he asked, and she asked him, "Well, are you in any way your firm Microsoft getting any results from this?" And he got very testy about it, and he said, "Look, I'm giving money away. Why are you questioning me on this?" Now, about the same time. There was a Washington Post newspaper article that mentioned the interview, and Microsoft website at the time was stating schools will need to give new Common Core alignment to the exams on the actual computers, and said it's recommended by IT professionals to migrate to the new Windows as soon as possible. Because that was part of Common Core. They were, I think it was donating computers too, but there were, he may have been giving more than he got out of it, but he was still kind of testy about that.
Mm-hmm.
So, now the other thing is that I looked at something that was, one person was rather favorable. It was like a YouTube, it was called "Why Students in the U.S. Need Common Core Math," and the one of the reasons was that Silicon Valley and high tech employers appreciate this. So it's called multi-dimensional math. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's best to learn the basic math and maybe go to the multi-dimensional math afterwards. Now, and also, and it was also President Obama was one of the pushers. Their children were not taught under Common Core. They went to a private school. No, but they did. I did check that up. So, and as I, let me see. Anyway, I did have a few here.
I was just going to say, it's interesting how much controversy there is about teaching math. It seems to... be an issue that never goes away. I'm not enough of an expert on the various methods that they use for it, but it seems to come up constantly. You know, teach it this way. No, that doesn't work. Teach it that way. This is a better way. That's a better way.
Well, it was, during the 1960s, this is something I know secondhand. They had something called the new math.
Mm-hmm.
And that became kind of famous in, like, Mad Magazine or whatever.
Right.
Talk. And it got phased out.
Yeah.
And this seems to be coming back to it. Like, he was bringing it back in a way. I mean, and now we got sort of like this new math that was, or something kind of like it. I think part of, I think that people don't kind of like about it is that it's more geared to maybe what a certain employer wants, as opposed to maybe what's the best thing in general. So, I mean, anyway. So it has gotten. Bill Gates is not. And certain people just don't trust him. Basically, they don't trust him in general. The Monsanto alignment with the Bill Gates Foundation, and so on. And also, he got involved with the vaccines, and people were sort of critical of him on that point. I mean, for whatever reasons.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting thing. I mean, you know, I just don't know it's a good thing to give, you know, a few rich individuals so much influence on these issues. I mean, I'm not going to get into, I don't know about the specifics, and I haven't, you know, super closely watched what, you know, Bill Gates has been doing, but he generally seems to have good intentions, I think. You never know. But at the same time, you know, he's an exceedingly rich person, and he's going to bring forth some biases, you know, that come along with his class and his position and how he came up and, you know, made his money. And that's not necessarily, you know, so, you know, even if his intentions are good, you know, he's representing a certain set of viewpoints, which may not be the best ones or may not, you know, cover all the bases.
What did you think of when he, I don't know if you saw this specifically, but I saw it quite a few times, when he said that he said the vaccine for COVID could only be done in certain developed countries, like India. He did not want India manufacturing its own. And he had reasons that they couldn't do it for such and such. No, I think that that's a very bad precedent. I mean, I don't see any reason why India, with sort of the problems that it has, could not do its own vaccine. I mean, he was basically pushing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember that discussion. But and I wonder if what he was talking about was whether they were ready to, you know, had the infrastructure ready to make it. But I do know. I think one of the things we learned from the COVID pandemic, among many other things, is that, you know, a nation or a country pretty much needs its own ability to manufacture and make not just things like vaccines, but all the other healthcare materials that were needed. You know, the PPE, the masks, and all the other things. Because when COVID was happening, we found ourselves competing with other countries to be able to import the produced materials because we'd stopped making those things.
That's another thing. I forgot about that one.
And one of the other things that was a problem, so we had real shortages and we couldn't meet those shortages with local production, and we were competing with other countries to get those materials from, say, China and other places where they were making them. And it was a similar story with vaccines, where we had very limited capacity to make them here in Canada. And at the same time, we were competing with other nations. And as a rich nation, we were doing a whole lot better than many other countries in the world. We had, you know, we were getting on to our third and fourth doses of vaccine before some countries had even completely vaccinated their population with the first dose. The idea that somewhere like India needs to be able to be making its own vaccine, to me at this stage, seems pretty self-evident, because, you know, if we don't in Canada and they don't in India and other places have capacity to make these things on their own, they're going to potentially lose out, you know, in the competition for resources in the next time a pandemic happens.
But he decisively said no.
Yeah.
No, I reviewed that statement quite a bit. He was saying we have to be made through the proper channels and all this. And I think there's a basic problem with doing that.
Well, like I say, I think as we've seen, that's probably not a good way to do it. We're just about at the end of the show. Thanks for bringing that discussion to us today, Peter.
Okay.
Do you have in mind what you might have next week?
One thing I be a bit different. Like a lot of people, you might think I like something like Cuba and Venezuela. I'm a bit critical of it. So I'm going to go over some of the points why I'm not a supporter of
interesting
Fidel Castro in the US and so on.
All right. Ayu, thanks for bringing profiling Himari Yoshimura. Is that it?
Yeah, Himari Yoshimura.
Yeah, the screen I have right in front of me doesn't have both her names. So thanks. That was really fascinating and a wonderful thing to look at there. Do you know what you're doing next week?
Maybe another profile, but I will attend some another music event the end of, so I think 21. So I also introduce the concert event about the information.
Great.
Next week or so.
All right. All right, we have just a little bit over a minute left in the program. Thanks, everyone, for being here. We started the program off with a feature interview on the SFU Ombuds Office. And then Ayu's profile of Himari Yoshimura. And finally, Peter brought us a discussion about Bill Gates' Common Core curriculum program. Pushing curriculum changes in the United States, particularly around math education. Thanks for tuning in today. Coming up in a few minutes is Democracy Now!, and that will be up at 11 o'clock. 12 noon is Wandering Rhythms, and at 3 p.m. is Typically Tuesday.
Wandering Rhythms, Mondays from noon to 2.
Join us in a weekly sample of music from planet Earth.
The strangest mixtape you will ever hear.
Desert blues.
Balkan punk.
Latin funk.
African psych.
Pigeon rap.
And anything and everything else you can imagine, equally represented by all continents.
Because good music is universal.
Wandering Rhythms.
Mondays at noon on CJSF 90.1 FM.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting live from Burnaby Mountain, Burnaby, BC.